grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to episode 101 of Dudes and Beer. I am Chris Jordan, your host. With me here in the studio tonight is, of course, the stalwart Stephen Bishop, as well as Julie Connolly over here on the board. We also have as our guest this evening the fantastic Austin musician Doug Strahan. We'll be talking with him here in a little while about some of his acts. The man is all over the place, literally. He has like three different bands that he is actively promoting, playing in, touring with, doing all kinds of stuff, recording, releasing albums. We're going to be talking about the life of a musician, the life of a musician on the road, what it takes to do that, the wherewithal that it takes to do that, as well as how it is that you go about enacting that and even making that dream happen, because it's not easy being cheesy, and that's the only way you can put it.
A lot of hard work and sacrifice, I'll tell you that much.
There is, Steve. And we're going to talk about that and so much more when we get back from this message from our sponsor.
Have you ever... thought about brewing your own beer? Is the urge to brew there, but you just don't know how to get started? Well, Dudes and Beer is here to help. Stop on by the new Dudes and Beer Amazon store and check out all the great brewing supplies and gear today. We have it all, from instructional books and do-it-yourself kits for beginners to 16-gallon cooking vessels, carboys, bottling supplies, and cleaners for all you homebrew pros out there. Everything you need to brew your favorite beverages, even distilling equipment. So stop on by the official Dudes and Beer store today and get your hand on the greatest new brewing essentials. Simply visit dudesandbeer.com and click the Dudes and Beer store tab. Once again, that website is dudesandbeer.com and click the Dudes and Beer store tab today. Happy brewing, everybody. And until next time, drink responsibly.
That's right, everybody. Please make sure to drink responsibly. Please make sure to drive responsibly when you drink, for crying out loud.
Right?
If you're out seeing great acts like Doug Strahan out on 6th Street, out on some of the venues,
do the responsible thing.
Use fare.
That's right.
Use fare. Use code DUDES10 and you will start saving money and accruing points towards your free rides with fare. You can also share your code with your friends and earn even more points.
And what did you say that code was, Chris?
Dudes10. So
awesome.
On that note, talking about Doug Strahan, let's get into it a little bit.
Sure.
How long have you been in the Austin scene? How long have you been? Because I mean, like we said in the intro, you're a member of like four different acts right now.
Yeah, or you know,
four different incarnations,
right,
of your music.
There's probably more than that.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'll list them all.
Let's talk a little bit about your history, where you're from, how you got into it, and why you started making music to begin with, Doug.
Sure. I grew up in Carrollton, Illinois, which is an hour due north of St. Louis,
nice
little farm town. And my dad played guitar when I was a kid, and he was, you know, I totally was, you know, crazy about his picking, and would always put the headphones on and like, hey, play this, you know, and he'd play it, you know, and so, before I even got started on guitar, like at a young age, I was ready, you know. And
nice.
By the time I was 12, I was starting to get in a little trouble, and I think he saw that, and like, he's like, "Yeah, it's time to get you on some lessons, man." You know,
give you something to do for at least an hour a day after school.
Yeah, exactly, man.
Constructive,
it really worked.
Stuff.
Yeah,
he bought a guitar that, you know, I wanted to get like a Flying V or an Explorer or something, and a
nice.
But he played in a country band, so he wanted me to get something that he could also gig on at night.
I think
this is the way he rationalized to my mom that he was going to buy a guitar. You know?
Absolutely.
It's like when a husband buys the bowling ball
for
the wife.
Puts his wife's name on it.
That's right. Yeah, and so anyways, first step out of Carrollton was to get into college. You know, so had some, you know, a few bands that we were in up in Charleston, Illinois, where Eastern Illinois University is there, and started working at a really cool radio station, and
nice.
Me and a couple of the DJs took a trip down to Austin, and it was It was great, you know.
We really?
Found, yeah.
What year was that?
That would have been 97.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right. Back when it was still good and live and kicking. Yeah.
Nah. Sixth Street had a lot more live stuff going on.
There was still stuff happening.
Yeah.
We had to ditch Sixth Street to find. We wanted to find Dale Watson. You know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. And,
You weren't going to find him on Sixth Street.
No, we found the Egos, and it was cool, man.
I know where Egos. Yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of set. That was back when Egos was cool.
Yeah.
Kim was running it, and
yeah,
it was a really it was a killer music scene happening there. But anyways, I was like, I wanted to go somewhere where I could, you know, hone in on playing like old country style music, and it was warm, you know. And like, you know, frankly, like out of my Midwestern element, I wanted to be somewhere.
Now you were just saying though, like that you really wanted a more of a flying V guitar though, right?
At an early age.
Yeah, at an early age. So you were kind of more into kind of maybe rock and roll, right?
Yeah. Metal and, you know.
What were some of your early influences that made you actively want to play? I mean, I'm always curious.
Yeah. Outside of my old man, I would say, like, Guns N' Roses, Appetite for Destruction.
All right.
You know, and like every kid, like Led Zeppelin and, I got into Metallica. And learning how to play Master of Puppets.
Oh, yeah.
My tablature was very satisfying.
That's intense. Yeah.
Hell yeah, I'm right there with you.
I'm with you.
You know, and I mean, I've been all over the map over the years as far as music, just kind of go down rabbit holes. And
but it's those roots, kind of that kind of, you know.
Yeah, man, I mean, and honestly, like, I think that outside of, I can't find anything valid about dubstep, but maybe someone can hit me to it, you know?
Well, I mean, as an electronic musician myself, I can see the value of dubstep.
Okay.
There's good for working out, too.
Oh, yeah.
Here, but otherwise, you know, I mean, I listen to all kinds of music.
I think everybody's kind of missed out on dubstep because really, we don't really understand what it is. It's actually aliens sending messages.
It is a very subculture thing in the EDM movement, the electronic dance music thing. There's a whole trend that happens in that scene where it you know, started with Glitch and went through all kinds of evolutions, you know, before it became dubstep. And it's that's a whole separate thing. And it's kind of interesting that you even bring that up because even saying that you're from Illinois, I understand a lot more of your influences now and a lot more of what I've heard. Even listening to albums like Cold Black Dreams, Late Night Schemes, stuff like that. Are you a finger player?
A little bit of both.
Okay. Nice. Because there were a few songs whenever we were listening earlier, I was like, this is straight up Mark Knopfler status.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
it reminded me of some Dire Straits.
Even the progressions and stuff like that were very much along those lines. But I could definitely hear your blues influence.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, like, blues root influence. Not like, because there's a very distinct Texas sound to Texas blues. Mississippi blues has a distinct sound, but Illinois blues,
Chicago
blues has a definite sound.
But he's from Illinois, Chris.
That's Chicago.
Well, yeah, you know, and I mean, I didn't.
Oh my gosh!
I didn't grow up on Chicago blues.
Yeah, but,
at all, you know?
No, but it's.
But I've gotten into it. You know, while living down here, and Texas. I mean, there's actually like it's hard to define. It's blues. Like, I mean, you have a lot of Gate Mouth Brown, and then you have Freddie King, and then you have Blind Lemon Jefferson.
I love me some Freddie King.
Yeah.
Lightning Hopkins. I mean, there's
some
wide array right there, you know?
Yeah, in and of itself, it's
Bob
a huge
Wills, I mean,
panoply.
It's kind of blues.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. Your music also lends itself to Texas swing.
Oh, yeah.
Sure does. Yeah.
On a very large note.
Yeah,
I think.
I think the old school swing.
Yeah, you've married, and I think a lot of the things that I've read on the internet, stuff like that, where there's some Merle Haggard throwback and things like that. I think they're very apt descriptions of a lot of not necessarily your influence, but the direction that you take your music.
Yeah.
Where do you draw that from, and where do you start writing from? Whenever you do start writing music, because there's and we're going to get into some of his songs here in a little while, y'all. Feel free to chat with us online if you've got the app, or if you're online with us live on Spreaker. Feel free to ask any questions that you want. But my question to you to start off with is, where do you draw from when you start writing a song? Because your songs and your styles are varied.
Right.
And even on an album, like Cold Black Dreams, Late Night Schemes, the stylization of it as it goes through. Number one, I love the simplicity with which it's recorded and the true honesty with which it's recorded.
Right.
There is not a lot of whiz bang, not a lot of crazy production.
Right.
It is stripped down, pure, and, you know.
Oh, a lot of that too. Ethan Shaw, my hombre, in Chilla Cold Blood.
Nice.
I've been playing with for 17 years.
Okay. Yeah, well, tell us a little bit about that.
We started playing together. I met him shortly after moving here. I was playing with Terry Joyce, and she had hired Ethan to play bass, and we hit it off, man. I mean, we're, you know, same age in this scene where everyone was kind of like kind of a wide range age wise alone, and then also like finding out that we were in a lot of same music. You know, outside of classic country, we were both into Sabbath and Metallica and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
People be surprised that, you know, like, you know.
Yeah, oh, yeah. You never know what the guy's into that's on stage.
Just because he's playing some or other.
Yeah. Know? And we're not unique in that manner by any means, especially in Austin. But anyways, we started playing together. Like, he wanted, you know, set up a wedding band called the LaSalle's, and we kind of got in the way of it, making any money, and started writing for it, and then that eventually evolved into Chilla Cold Blood. And then out of Chilla, we decided we needed a country outlet because we weren't able to take as many gigs. We got busy.
Yeah,
sure. We started the Moonhangers.
Okay.
Yay.
Yeah, and then those two.
That's what I found you. Julie is a
huge Moonhanger.
Oh, yeah. I think you got a fan here. I think I hear.
Yeah.
You know, and,
nice.
So, I mean, yeah, we've been running for a long time. I mean, between those two bands, outside of the solo stuff, we got this Chilla Cold Blood record coming out is our 8th Chilla record, and we got
that's awesome, bro.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot.
And then three Moonhangers, and
that's,
you know,
prolific. And you said 17 years?
Yeah, I moved in '99. So
okay,
yeah,
that's when you came to Austin. '99.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that's great. Like that's on the order of an album every other year. That's
just about, yeah.
That's pretty incredible. And
stay on that pace.
and that's just with the one band.
Right.
Just with the one incarnation of your music. Like, explain to us the different facets that are Doug Strahan. Because these bands obviously are different outlets for you.
Oh, like different faces.
This
band's for this. This band's for that kind of deal.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, you know, honestly, like, one of the things that always just kind of frustrated me as a writer and a musician is that I hadn't had like this stubborn identity of this is me, screw y'all, I'm gonna do this, you know.
Yeah.
But as a result, you know, I wind up going in all these different, like I said, like rabbit hole tangents.
Sure.
And you know, I love too much music to want to like to focus on
hold
one
you
thing.
Back on yeah. one thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, so. Like, Memphis Strange is more like a Stonesy, Southern Rockish thing, and I love that stuff, man. That's a whole other ball game, and it's a little more heavy on the lyrical side. Like, you know, Johnny Dango, one of the singers, is a he's a very like crafted wordsmith, you know.
Okay.
And then Chilla Cold Blood is just, you know, straight from the crotch. Like rock and roll, you know.
Rock on.
Yeah.
Kind of has that rock and roll kind of oof, you know. To it, you know.
And then, you know, country is probably pretty much self-explanatory. And then the Good Knaves just kind of became like this fun, just a way to explore all this different music I dig. Like, I didn't want to have my own band be like a hardcore country, even though I dig the tonk. But, you know, being from Illinois, I'm like, I had to explain all the time I'm not from Texas, man.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to put on like I'm from here, you know. I'm,
sure.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I know.
You're
know.
Here now.
Right. Yeah. Well, true that, you know. It's my Captain Boots talking there. But anyways, I want it to be more like a band that, you know, from the 60s and 70s that played all kinds of different styles, you know. I mean, you could go in the country and then you could slip out of it and play a rocker.
Right.
Well,
that's what we do.
And to quote you specifically, you say, to put it simply, we're an American band, or if you're into the whole subgenre thing, then call it American old school. It's funky, but it isn't funk. There's country, soul, and blues in there, but it isn't any of these. It's American, but it's not Americana.
Right.
Like my favorite bands from the 60s and 70s were steeped in old school American music, but we've evolved into something all its own. And I think that that is a very apt description of the oeuvre that I've heard over the last week, kind of Google stalking you.
Yeah, yeah.
And, reading reviews and all kinds of... Yeah, no, I Google stalk people, bro. I'm kind of creepy with what I do.
Can I use that to send a 9 Mile record?
Right?
He knows more about you than you know about yourself.
You're hired.
Bam. I like knowing about my guests. I like doing as much research as possible and trying to find out, like, where they started, where they came from. And you're quite honestly, other than that, kind of an anomaly.
Yeah.
Because there's not a whole lot, as long as you've been involved in the Austin music scene, as long as you've been doing stuff, it's interesting that you've kind of hidden your identity. And you've kind of kept a lot of this kind of a hidden gem and a hidden secret, and it's amazing to find it, and it's amazing to find that diamond in the rough and be like, this is some really cool stuff.
Yeah.
I wish more people knew about this.
Yeah, right. Me too.
And, to hear the fact that, and tell us a little bit about it, because
word of mouth.
It's not that you aren't out there. It's not that you aren't doing things.
Yeah.
It's the fact that your genres are so varied,
right.
and that what you're doing is so different than everybody else that it's interesting to find it, number one, and interesting to find it all in one person. As someone who's worked in music and was an engineer for years live, to find someone that can cover so many different genres and do so many different things, and write in so many different styles is pretty impressive.
Hell yeah, it is.
Much less to know that you are this prolific. The fact that, most people are in a band for 3-4 years and maybe they put out an album.
Right.
Whereas you consistently seem to churn out music and music and music and music and music with all of these incarnations.
Oh, yeah.
And, tell us a little bit about the tour that you just got off of, because you just came back from a week or so on the road in New Mexico, like that.
Yeah, we basically, like, two of the bands, Estrange and the Good Neighbors, have been pretty much touring since January and rotating. And this last one was Johnny Dango from Estrange and me. We did an acoustic run through New Mexico, and it's a short run. Like, we started off in Marfa, and then and then, like, that was a Wednesday, and then ended on the following, on Easter Sunday, in Madrid, which is a great place to...
Nice.
Yeah. And they,
awesome.
They actually pronounce it Madrid, not Madrid, But it's like, it's a cool little kind of hippie mountain valley town out there that, that's been, had its own freak flag for a long time. Like, they've always had this 4th of July parade out there that, that goes back to at least the early 1900s. And
really?
You can see photos of how, like, eccentric and far out some of the,
wow,
the locals were back then, so it's a really cool spot, and, but New Mexico is perfect for doing acoustic runs because they're already kind of into the more folksy side of things. And,
nice.
We played, it was fun. Played for all kinds of different people and camped in between and drank some beers.
And we were saying just before we went on air, it's a great way to actually intro your music to a wider audience. It's a great way to say, hey, if you like this.
Yeah.
You should hear the incarnation of this piece.
You hit them and run like
Billy
the
Kid.
With
the whole band.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Hit them and run.
I don't know if it, I like to think that that's the way it works, but I'm not sure that it does,
Not always. Not always.
Because for one, like the, a lot of like the funkier, more R&B, background of some of these bands, it's really hard to, unless you're Bill Withers or something, it's hard to bring across on an acoustic.
Yeah.
Without a good beat going and everything.
Yep.
I think you just play to the gig, you play to the song,
Yeah.
And if they see that you're, like, I mean, hopefully you do your job, you show up and you play a good show.
Yeah.
And that will like lead them to be interested in seeing the full band, you know.
Well, I'm interested to see out of the tracks that you provided us tonight, which one you choose to play first. Because I want to see where you want to intro our audience to your oeuvre.
Oh, boy. Because
you've provided us with three tracks for the evening, and they're varied in style.
Well,
is my favorite on there?
So, I was bringing them to push the Chili Cobra. And the Memphis Strange.
Nice.
The Memphis Strange I was not able to download because it wasn't on Google Drive or anything like that. So I've actually got it up here live on the internet. Ready to go. So whichever one you want to start with, we're ready to go with, my friend.
Yeah. Well, shoot, man. Let's play the Dewdrop In. This one was written for the latest Chili Cold Blood record. We did this session out in at Ethan's cabin. It was all live, me and him and Ethan Shaw and Matt Purrier. And we basically, you know, we had a rundown of the song, and then we worked up the song, and then we played it again, then we recorded, you know.
Okay.
And it'd usually be like second track after that.
No.
So y'all didn't practice it very much.
And we'll talk a little bit about that afterward, because I'm all about that. And right now we're going to listen to Dewdrop In by Chili Cold Blood off the album...
Cabin Session.
All right, Cabin Session. Here we go. Come here, Mouse.
Here, Mousey. Can't see bucket lots of dirt and stone. Blood still sticky from the night before. Say like the moon, sometimes she needs a little more. That smile feels troubled and it'll meet me at the door. With the shadow bubbling right up to the ceiling.
Okay, I'm sorry. I totally accidentally hit the pause button on that.
It's all good.
We're just going to like fade out and like, you know.
Yeah, no, typically I would gently fade that out and come back in. I went to move the mouse and actually hit just plain stop. So, yeah, okay, I hate to do that on Dewdrop In because that is a sick track.
Dude, that was sick.
And we were kind of noting back and forth. Ethan was the slide guitar on that.
Yeah, playing steel.
And
he used to play slide, and now he's like...
I love the fact that the one thing that I have enjoyed more than anything over the last week, actually finding your music and looking you up and everything, is the utter raw nature of the recordings. And it seems to me like you're very much into the same thing that I am, where it's like... The synergy of musicians playing together at the same time, as opposed to take after take in a studio and being able to do things in the most precise way.
Right.
There's something that, and I was telling Steve this beforehand, whenever I booked bands, this is what I looked for.
Right.
I looked for people that had live recordings. I looked for people that, like, I could tell when somebody had, like, a polished studio demo.
Well, it's like either you got it or you don't, kind of in a way, you know? I mean, the way I look at it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do it a million times and get that one out of a million. Oh, it sounds great and everybody knows you for that one. But how many tries did it take to get that one?
Yeah.
And, I mean... I don't know.
She's the first three.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Exactly.
Seriously. Exactly.
Like you were telling me. Yeah. Solos, the rhythm tracks, all that
I'd like you to explain that theory a little bit, and then I'll talk about my theory of recording in the same right. So.
Yeah, I mean, personally, like, we've you know, set up in so many different spaces recording-wise. I mean, we've done, like, you know, we had a proper studio and then jet setting, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
And that's with, like, me and Ethan and Matt. And
that doesn't matter to you where you set up?
Not so much anymore, man. I used to be, felt like some studios were stifling when I was younger, but I don't care. I love recording, you know?
It could be grungy or it could be professional. It doesn't matter to you, kind of deal.
Well, yeah, I mean... Okay, I think it's first, you know, you play to the song, you know? So if it's a song that, like, jives with everyone in the room doing it live, which usually it is, you know, then do it that way, you know? Otherwise, and then, you know, as far as your tones and, you know, going for raw or clean or whatever, I think you go according to the song, you know? And that's probably, like, if there's any one, like, a rule or whatever.
Yeah.
Kind of virtue thing.
See, everybody gives me hell about the kind of like his kind of rule is like kind of like he said, like, oh, that was the third take or whatever, you know, or whatever, you know. And it's like I kind of believe that, kind of like just kind of going at, oh, it's fresh, and kind of it just captures that rawness, you know.
Well, it does. It does definitely capture the synergy between musicians,
right,
and that's whenever I did, especially demo CDs for bands.
Mm.
That's something that I would try to explain to them was, listen, the sitting you're like magnum opus,
right?
You know, where you're gonna sit down and go like Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon, and we're gonna do as many overdubs and things like that as possible.
Right.
This is for you to go out and get gigs. This is for you to give people a representative recording of what you are live.
Yeah.
And the idea is to get the best possible representative recording in an enclosed space in an encapsulated amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And typically I would give them the concept of, listen, we're gonna have about 3 hours of record time after setup. So I would say 6 songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're going to come back and we're going to play them either 6 songs or 4 songs.
Yeah.
And we'd either play them as 3 sets or 4 sets.
Right.
And you vary them.
Yeah.
You don't come back and play them in the same order.
Yeah, right.
You run them straight through 1 through 4, and then we're going to come back and we're going to do them 4, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
You know, and at that point, you're actually getting some different vibe. You're not getting hung up on what you're doing in the process.
Yeah, getting tired.
Yeah, you know, not getting burned out on the fact that I just can't hit that solo.
Right.
It may just be the order of songs that you've been doing it in that didn't let you hit that space.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, it's funny, our bass player that's in the Good Neighbors, or one of the bass players.
I was going to say.
Yeah. And then, he's probably, I've been playing with him for a long time, David Slowski. You know, we were talking about it, and he's like, man, you know, when you're not dealing with the expense of actual tape, you should just, instead of, like, every time you do a take and then you have to redo it, just keep the tape rolling so everyone's not, like, stopping and starting and then sitting there and then hearing the click, you know, and all that stuff.
Right.
It's a lot more like just flowing.
Just having it rolling the whole time, right?
Yeah. Stops, you know, it's like, all right, well, let's try that again. And then you know, like, all right, ready?
Right.
Set, go. Yeah. You know?
Well, to me,
that energy is like stopping and starting. It's like,
even with the music that I make electronically and stuff like that, most of the time I try to explain to people, I have this huge command station with outboard gear, all kinds of stuff. I use my digital recording system as a huge 4-track.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that I do is commit to the mix. If there is a reverb that I want on my keyboard, that's what's going on my keyboard track when I record it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to come back and find that reverb later. You know, I very much do things, and it scares a lot of engineers that I've worked with. It scares a lot of people that I've had mix my music, because it doesn't give them a lot of leeway to do what they do.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's maintaining that this is what existed in that moment.
Right.
No, and totally. To, yeah. What is it to you? Because from what I hear in the music, it seems like you're very dedicated to that. It seems like you're very dedicated to what happens now as opposed to the precision of the music and the precision of the recording.
Oh, yeah.
Why is it that you prefer that? Why is it that you tend that way?
The Stones are a perfect example of how you can, like, you can write a song and then, you know, the way to keep a song alive is to allow it to change over time with you, you know, where you don't feel like, okay, I wrote this country song, I need to play it like a straight country as I, you know,
honky tonk women.
Yeah,
prime example.
Satisfaction. I mean, you go back to those real early tracks and the way they did them, like in this, their prime, and my opinion, their prime in the 70s.
Yeah.
There's a whole different groove going on. You know, whenever you're out there playing and touring a lot and like every night, and it's like, you know, allowing yourself to go for something different.
You're right.
Like, you know, and it could lead to the song taking on a whole other, you know, groove, or just, I mean,
true that.
Changing the entire song, you know.
I've got a friend that's really into Stones and said in the 80s that you can go back and watch the footage of their live footage, you know, of concerts, and they will take Satisfaction and another, you know, the big hits and stuff, and it's all sped up. Like, you know, and it's totally like an 80s version of those songs, but it's a different version, he said.
Yeah.
It's fucking, you know, it's kind of summer or like that, I think, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it takes a life of its own, and it changes over time, or changes.
Absolutely, man.
You know?
Yeah. Are there, you know, the way they recorded Sticky Fingers is my favorite, man.
Yes. Yes, and explain that a little bit, because that's one of my favorite Stone songs ever.
Oh, I
love that track.
It that record just, it's awesome. Everything, Can't You Hear Me Knock is probably my favorite jam on there. But Dead Flowers, like, the way they recorded it, you know, it was like, you know, meant to be, like, I think it was after Keith Richards hung out with Graham Parsons, like, they started working. I think that's how it worked. I'm not sure on that. But anyways, you know, it's more of a jangly kind of...
It's one of those cool rumors.
Very,
cool stories.
Very loose, but still a country groove on the record. But when they started doing it out live, like, Charlie Watts' groove would be completely different, you know, and it'd make it more of like a more energetic, you know, just a little funkier.
How are you on, like, effects? What's your deal on that? Like, what do you like? What don't you like?
Man, you know, for a long time, I was like, you know, I'd always point to Angus Young and be like, have you ever seen his blueprint, man? It's guitar, cable, amp.
You know? There you go. Dude, ain't that how I run, Chris? Normally, that's how I normally run.
That was back in the day. Guitar, I mean, now I got a bunch of
guitar, cable, gain.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Crank the gain, lower the volume.
Dude, that's how I played a lot of my shows, and people are like, dude, I like the way this sounds, like, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, I don't have no effects, bro. Like, I mean, I know y'all play, but I just, guitar, cable, amp, you know?
Yeah. But I do, I mean, you know, there's some good, there are some, like the, a lot of 60s sound in the early 70s is Univibe. I mean, it's all over all the Faces stuff and Hendrix. And
I got me a Leslie 825.
Oh, man.
Well,
I need to get it fixed. I'm going to get it fixed. It did stop one day, and I haven't used it in a while, but
And it's interesting even talking about that, because a lot of your sound is very vintage, very, very classic rock, classic country driven. Even with the vocal effects, things like that. What is your process in the studio whenever you get there? Because everybody's a little bit different. Like, some people, like I said, straight live track everything. Some people track things one thing at a time. Are you everybody playing at the same time? Do you do the tracking yourself and go somewhere else to have it mastered? Or
No. I'll usually map out, like, per song, like, what I think it should, you know, like, should it be upright or electric bass? You know, should this have keys, steel, like, how many guitars, all that sort of stuff. Harmonies, where, that sort of thing. And then, I don't know, you know, again, like, playing to the song, like, I always try to come in with notes, like, okay, I want these things to happen in this
but
song.
But it seems kind of like a live recording, though, is probably your preference, kind of, right?
You know, It depends, man. There are some, like, I want to have more, you know, like, get as much of it as you can live.
Yeah.
And then, like, okay, where what's missing.
Yeah.
You know, or what needs to be taken out. You know?
True.
You yeah. know, what space needs to be added.
Yeah, whatever, punch yeah. punch recorded guitar solo yeah. or things like that.
You know, yeah.
Or a key solo.
Right. And I mean, because a lot of times, you know, you don't need to have, just because you have, like, say you have three guitar tracks on a, it's kind of nonsense to have three going at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
True. And it could get complicated because one guy screws up, you know, and the well, next time it, someone else it, does, and the know, next time it's me, you know, and, well, yeah. and next time it's take 20, it's you know?
Doug doesn't screw up.
At what point with your recording process, have you ever been a self-recordist? Have you ever been self-produced? Yeah, have you ever been self-produced? Where? Yeah.
Well, I mean, all the Blood Chili, like Chili Cold Blood and yeah. Moonhangers, it's all like, you know, we all pitch in the ideas for it.
Sure.
And then,
well, I mean like self-recorded, like myself, I record everything. I may take it to somebody here mm-hmm. and there on occasion
yeah.
to have it mixed, mastered,
yeah,
that
I mean,
kind of stuff. But
I've always
most
leaned.
Of the tracking and engineering and recording is done by me
oh, yeah,
in not, my home studio and stuff like
yeah,
that. So
I've always leaned heavily on yeah? people for that. Yeah, I mean, I'm just...
Okay.
I don't know if it's a... I don't know if it's just not in my... If I'm not interested, or if you know, if I'm a,
it's not for everybody. It on, you know? It's not yeah. for everybody because it literally, it's one of those things. You know, I explain in a lot of my Talking Sound podcast where once you get equipment like that, it's a lot like owning a vintage car,
right?
Yeah, or like a really nice car.
Either
you got to know how to turn the wrench, or you better have a buddy that knows how to turn a wrench.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's the same thing with yeah. like expensive equipment yeah. in a studio, in a live rig, whatever.
Yeah.
You either
yeah.
better know every exactly. cable patch in there, and you created it.
Yeah.
Or you better carry that somebody. Dude who created it in your back pocket.
Right.
Everywhere that you go.
Yeah.
And that's been my advice for years as a live sound guy. Whenever people have asked me about effects, things like that.
Yeah.
Is Buy as much off the shelf as you can.
Right.
Boutique is great.
Yeah.
But when it breaks down on the road, when you're out in, Las Cruces, Mexico, New Mexico, are you going to be able to hop into your local music shop and find that boutique delay
right.
pedal?
No, it's
are true, you going to be able to fit that thing that is key to your sound?
Yeah.
And, you know, as a touring musician, as someone who does stuff like that, you know, that's something that you really have to take into account.
Oh, yeah.
Even whenever you record.
Right.
It's something like Rush is a favorite band because anytime I go and see them, they sound pretty damn close to the way they do on the album.
Right.
And they don't play to a lot of stem tracks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's interesting. And that's one thing that I love about your music and what I've heard online is that it's very honest, true, and representative of what a live show would be.
Yeah, that's cool, man.
And I absolutely appreciate and love that because yeah. there's nothing like, especially having booked bands in the past, thinking like, oh, wow, these guys have a great horn section. No.
Right.
They had a great horn section in the studio
yeah.
for like two or three tracks, but
yeah.
that's not what they are.
Well, this next record...
But nobody came in from yeah. the rain to hear the jazz go down.
Well, and the, exactly.
The
and,
next,
and,
yeah,
the next record. Tell yeah. us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we're going in May. And
nice.
It's going to be, you know, again, like kind of a run of a gamut. Like there's going to be...
And that's with whom?
With the Good Neighbors.
Okay.
How many tracks are you going to lay down?
I'm still kind of on the fence. It's going to be between 6 and 8.
Yeah.
And nice. Yeah, and it's, you know, there's going to be some that's country, and you mm-hmm. know, I'm hoping to all groove, you know.
And do you do some guitars. Of the songwriting itself, or
oh, yeah.
a lot of it, or all of it, probably?
Yeah, I mean, all my songs yeah. I sing on the records. Yeah.
yeah.
It's all. So all it's you, either I wrote it or I co-wrote it with someone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
I've co-written a couple things over the years, but yeah, we're gonna. Kind of mess around a little bit with some tracks and kind of, you know. Cause
I think
always,
when you get loose is when it's at, you know. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you feel
oh, yeah,
good,
for sure.
You feel loose. You
well, yeah. And
things
I mean,
come out, you know.
I think it can be cool, like, if you can, you know, find a, I think, like, Pink Floyd, you know.
Right.
Sure.
Those guys in the studio versus those guys live. I mean, they're not going to be able to do everything they do in the studio that, live, but it's still
yeah,
a
but
great
that's why
show.
People buy records too.
Right,
yeah.
exactly.
Yeah,
and you
yeah.
gotta have the best of both worlds, where you don't have to necessarily
right.
represent yourself live on 100%.
No, what you want is a representative.
Right.
I mean, there's, and you know, I had the privilege of working Roger Waters' The Wall when it was here.
Yeah.
And it's pretty darn representative.
Yeah.
And they don't actually do a lot of stem tracking, things like that. It's literally a band of like 18 people that are making that happen.
Wow,
it's insane. It's crazy sauce. That's what it takes to pull off that music live. And yeah, a lot of it is sampled from keyboards, stuff like that.
Right.
You know, they have a lot of pre-sampled cues.
But you know, if you
everything
go like,
else,
live at Pompeii, which is my favorite.
Oh, my favorite
right
too.
I mean, that's, you know,
Got
that on DVD.
That's a life that's a life changer.
Hope I didn't plug something that I shouldn't have plugged, but yeah.
Yeah. And quite honestly, here's a question for me as an Uber fan. Because that's actually a very Gilmore-driven album. Yeah. What are your thoughts pre and post Gilmore?
Oh man,
I know. That's like an underneath slider right there.
Yeah.
That's a hard question. That's hard as a musician.
I don't know about all that. You know, post Gilmore, man. I think
pretty
critical.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't remember, but I'm also like,
I mean, post Roger Waters, like you know,
Kind of honestly, I haven't really delved into it, you know.
Really?
That era
Floyd,
you know?
Really?
Yeah.
With the Syd Barrett and all that.
Well, we're talking about after Roger Waters.
After
the breakup of the band.
Bell. What's it called?
It would be Delicate Sound of Thunder. It would be, you know, Momentary Lapse of Reason.
Right.
But then there's one more.
Division Bell. There would be after Division Bell, the one that came out like a year ago.
Right.
Or so,
yeah.
and I absolutely loved that one.
Cool,
it was great.
But, right on, man.
Final cut,
and it's that was the last Roger Waters album.
That's what I meant. Yeah, the last Roger Waters
album. It's interesting to hear people's perspective on music and how they think about things because it to me reflects a lot in what people do with their music.
Right,
and you know. Like I said, you are a varied artist. You have numerous different styles, numerous different genres that you draw on in your music. Even the reviews that I have of you from RootsMusic.com, Austin American Statesman, things like that.
Yeah.
It runs the gamut.
Yeah.
Where do you place yourself? What if you were to give yourself, and I know we described your description of yourself earlier, but if you were to give yourself a general genre, where would you tell people to go find your music? What kind of music would you say that you're making?
Well, I mean, okay, here's a question for you. Where would you put, you know, I don't mean to...
That's all right. That's okay. Answer it with a question.
You know, like J.J. Kill is one of my, you know...
Okay.
I love that... We can cuss on
that,
right?
That's all right.
Yeah. You can cuss. It's 21 and up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my favorites. And where do you put him, man?
Yeah.
You know, where do you put Leon Russell?
Mm.
You know? And,
true,
or Joe Cocker, like all those styles.
Yeah.
Of music, you know, I mean, it's really hard to pin that down, right?
It is. Because those are people, especially people like Joe Cocker, that literally ran the gamut of what they did. I mean, you're talking about everything from adult contemporary to the beginnings of like beat poetry and music and stuff like that with some of his stuff.
I would think if I was Doug that maybe he gets a lot of like outlaw country kind of genre-ish, you know, like if somebody wants or someone
in a category,
yeah.
I mean, you know,
some or other, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I've listened, you know, delved in definitely with, you know, Waylon and Willie and everybody and a lot of different country, you know. Merle Haggard.
Oh yeah.
You know, I really like kinda studied him, like his lyric wise.
Really?
He's interesting, man, because he's one of those few guys that, you know, he did it all. I mean he could play, you know, anything with strings, you know.
Yeah.
Fiddle, lead guitar, bass.
Yeah.
Like one of his first gigs was on bass. He wrote, he sang.
Nice.
He did it all. Like a lot of guys back then, like they would just sing and they were great.
Yeah.
You know? But I mean, he did it all and consistently through the years. And
Yeah.
That's always been, like, I'm like, oh, yeah, see that? That's cool, man, you know?
Yeah.
I consider myself a lead, like, I'm a band leader in a sense, but I'm a sideman.
Because that's literally one of the descriptions I put down for you tonight was band leader, because it is.
I don't consider you side at all.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just like the comrade mentality. Whoever you're playing with.
Well, and it's definitely the fact of a band leader, because your stuff stretches so many genres, just like Merle's did. It wasn't just country. You've got ballads, you've got swing stuff, you've got stuff that is like hard, down and dirty, like Delta blues style action.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting to hear this panoply of stuff from somebody who is local to the Austin scene and stretching out beyond into New Mexico. Everywhere else.
Oh, yeah.
Over the last 17 years.
What's somebody that you're following right now that's you're listening to that you like?
Is there current? Anybody?
Yeah, current.
You know, I'm
right now that you're into.
Yeah, Sturgill.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love Sturgill.
Yeah, absolutely. Really?
And there's Tame Impala. Just like they got this one. There's one. The record's pretty cool, but there's one track called Elephant that's. It's awesome, man.
Okay.
It's like really? Real dirty. Okay. It sounds like a, like the way Floyd's, I can't remember the song, but there was like this Blondie and Pink Floyd had this real similar shuffle. Gung, 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 gung,
oh, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Oh, and, I kind of sound like that, yeah.
But who else is there? Kind of, you know, check it out. Kendrick Lamar, my girlfriend, has been all about it. You know, Butterfly, so I've been listening to
it. Helps to have the girlfriend on board, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I dig hip-hop, man. I'm always... But I'm also, like, I'm always, you know, kind of staying current and then going back and forth, like, between the two, you know. A lot of guys around town. I mean, Leo Rondo and Ramsey Midwood.
Ramsey Midwood. Yeah. Straight up, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly, when I first moved, I actually have a recording of and Ramsey Midwood, if you're listening, if you know Ramsey Midwood.
I do.
Get him in touch with me, because we talk here and there and stuff.
He's on his Palm Pilot. What are you talking about?
Oh, he'd be.
literally,
he might be.
I have a live recording of Ramsey Midwood out at... out at Sam's Town Point.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Ramsey that was right.
He was one of the first people that I met in Austin and came out and recorded and ran sound for and stuff like that.
Awesome.
Yeah, I've got a great Ramsey Midwood live recording.
That's cool.
Yeah,
he asked me to play guitar on a run up to Oklahoma, and it was really cool, man.
That's dope.
It was fun. Yeah. And it was like right when I was first getting the Good Neighbors touring. And so I was, you know, just kind of drilling him with questions. And
of course,
he was great, man. Everywhere we played, he, you know, introduced me to the owner. And be like, you should hire Doug. You know, I mean, like direct, like, you know, cool. And at one point, outside of all the laughter, because he's one of the funniest cats.
Oh God, man. He is a riot, bro. Yeah. Oh my God, he's a riot. Yeah.
So after, like, you know, we're talking about how he kind of. He thought he lost his phone and was calling this convenience store, and then
me.
Well, then he used that. He found the phone, but he still called them, and he used it as a way to like riff with this lady, and he kept her on the phone for like 20 minutes.
Oh my God!
But after, you know, all the laughs of that, you know, I was like, so, you know, how much are you asking for when you're out? Like, how do you afford it? You know, and blah 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 blah. And he's like, Doug. Buddy, you're going on a journey.
Welcome to it. And that's it. Like, because there are insider secrets. And, like, that's one of the reasons why I started the Talking Sound podcast. Because, like, it's really more about the AV industry and the inside secrets of, you know, engineers and things like that. Not this one. but, yeah, like, and that's one of the things that I love talking to musicians about on there and on this show is that, you know, there are little tips, there are little secrets, there are little gems that, you know, people don't consider the fact that, hey, yeah, if I go out and play a happy hour for a couple hours once a week, like, I can actually get paid.
Oh, yeah.
And I can do my other music on the side, but this actually helps pay some bills.
Yeah, you got to hustle, man.
And you do have to hustle, and it's a constant hustle in this industry.
You
got
to be able to play, like, you know, solo, duo, trio, up to, you know, however many pieces.
Up to your whole band, exactly.
Five and six, seven piece at one point.
Yeah, I mean, you know? And you got to be able to you got to be able to market the whole thing. You got to be able to know, like, which venues that you step in that you can be like, oh, this is the place that I need to sell this to.
Yeah, and I need to definitely improve on the marketing aspect of things. I mean, it's a very costly. PR is expensive.
Oh, it's crazy.
But there are guys
expensive.
Out there that are really good at
it. It's insane. Ask Julie how much she makes.
$0.00
Well, she makes a ton.
We're pretty close, baby.
I would work for you for gas.
I'll tell you right now.
I will work for you for gas money.
I, as the owner of this podcast, make a third of what she makes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where's my hammer?
Dango likes to say we're making hundreds of dollars a year. You know.
That's right. But it's like my old upright bassist used to say. It's not the gig you're playing us. It's not the gig you're paying us for. It's the travel here and the hours of practice that it took to get to
everything,
this point.
Man. Everything involved.
Check this out, Doug. Towns Van Zandt or Bob Dylan? Which one?
Oh, I prefer not to choose.
I mean, it depends on when too. Dylan, in the 70s.
I've heard the argument, you know, is Towns better Dylan? I mean, I strictly on the prolific level, I mean, I think Dylan was, you know.
Yeah.
You know, his period is
magical. Because a longer period, right?
Yeah, longer, and then, like, that, you know, his first, like, he changed everything with like, 4 years of music.
True that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, because, you know, the Beatles changed everything.
Yeah.
And the Beatles wouldn't have changed everything had they not checked out Dylan, you know. True. And the rest is history, man, you know.
I choose to think they wouldn't have changed as much had they not checked out Elvis.
Yeah.
Because that's who they first marketed themselves after.
But, and
like
Buddy Holly.
Okay, here's another one. On the rock and roll side, how about Randy Rhoads, Eddie Van Halen?
Oh, man. I would say, just by my own history, Eddie Van Halen,
Eddie Van Halen?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Now,
okay.
On all that right. note, talking about great songs, talking about great musicians, we need to listen to another track.
We sure do.
By you. And an actual whole track where we don't stop it halfway through. Which is your choice here? We have Strange Seconds and we have Good Girl.
You want to go up to Strange Seconds? Is a full album. Is
okay.
To pull up a track.
If
you just go down here.
Okay, which one you want, buddy?
I have to do the old Driving Rain.
Driving Rain? Okay. Yeah. Well, we're about to check out Driving Rain off the album...
The Memphis Strange. It's called Strange Seconds. It's second album.
Okay, Driving Rain, the second track. Flood. And to those of you that were tuned in live right there, we apologize for any kind of technical difficulties. We actually had to stream that online, so there were some people that got to hear it, some people that didn't get to hear it. Apparently, our app listeners did not. Thank you so much for tuning in and letting us know that. That kind of stuff is hugely important, guys. If you don't have the Dudes and Beer app, please feel free to stop on by the Dudes and Beer website. You can download the app there, dudesandbeer.com. You can also download the app on the Google Play Store as well as iTunes. And right now we are,
woohoo!
I've been thoroughly enjoying the music of of our guest Doug Strahan tonight. That one was by
Doug.
Well,
dude, Doug's music is sick.
Somebody's fighting me over here.
It's me.
Fighting me.
Fighting me. Yes. There we go. So yeah, I mean, I've thoroughly enjoyed sitting back talking with Doug this
evening. When you get two musicians together, you know, I mean, like we were talking earlier, I thought it was a point that I like is, you know, that's why I remember, because it's the fact that it was a fresh song. You record it, and you record it like, hey, we've only played it three times. Let's do this. Let's record it. Let's see how good it comes out. And you get that rawness, you know? There's a certain thing there, because people can tell this isn't very well rehearsed in a way.
To me, it's really the overproduction of modern day music.
You hear like Janis Joplin in the day, and you hear, you know, artists back in the 60s and shit like that.
Well,
you know, it kind of resembles that kind of rawness, you know?
And a lot of that actually has to do with the analog recording process.
Well,
at the time,
too.
They didn't have digital.
Right.
They didn't have the option to do 89 retakes of vocals. They didn't have the option to do overdub after overdub after overdub.
Right.
They had a limited budget. They had a limited number of tracks that they could actually play. And speaking of limited number of tracks, we're actually going to go back and play Do Drop In, the full track here, because we did cut that off earlier. And then whenever we come back, we will talk with our guest, Doug Strahan, about both of those, the creation of them, the process of writing them, and more. Right after this, bring it on, Julie.
Bring it, Julie.
Ceiling, on and on, as you drop in. city shoreline, kicking up the sand. We're the shadows bumping right up to the ceiling. On and on as we keep driving. Screaming like a fan, she comes away with some hell. With the shadow bumping right up to the ceiling. On and on and dropping.
And that is an incredible track. I'm so glad that we got to hear that all the way through. Thank you so much to Richard Adams and Amy Jordan, who were there letting us know about the technical difficulty.
And Brian.
That and Brian as well. That will be absolutely fixed in post for those of you that didn't get to hear Good Girl. But those two tracks are by Chili Cold Blood.
Correct. Good Girl is one of Ethan's songs.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, explain a little bit about the creation of those, what they're about, and what drove y'all to create them?
Chili is kind of evolved over the years, you know. I mean, we started off with this style of music. It was more like Hound Dog Taylor, R.L. Burnside, you know, Lazy Lester, Lightning Hawk, or Lightning Slim, that kind of stuff.
And, sure.
Nice.
And then, you know, but as it went on, like, we kind of started to let our other influences in, you know, like everything from Sabbath to, you know, Sly and Beastie Boys, and, you know, I mean, Outkast, you know.
Nice.
I mean, seriously, like, lyric-wise, at least. And then, you know, so it all, like, came up to this point where the last record we put out, and Now the Dawn, was, like, you know, intended on being, we're not, you know, we don't consider ourselves a metal band where we're just like, wow.
No, but I could definitely hear from what y'all were just playing. There's especially in Maine,
a little bit of thrash in there, right?
It's called Graveyard Blues.
Graveyard, oh yeah.
Yeah, and it's like this dark version of blues,
right,
that's in there, and it's very, you know, kind of Reverend Horton Heat meets swing, meets blues.
Yeah,
it's very much influenced in there. You
know? Yeah. That's cool,
you know,
man.
there's some really heavy influence in that with the slide and everything
front,
else.
Poker in the rear.
Yeah, and I mean, we started off playing the Poodle Dog, and we were, you know, we weren't really like a rehearsal band. Our gigs were the rehearsal, you know, and so the simpler the song, the better. And
sure,
right.
With the, you know, pulling from mainly like kind of Mississippi styles early on, you know, a lot of songs like John Lee Hooker and Ian Burnside, like, you know, any kind of change like to the four, you know, like a typical blues change, 12 bar, is implied. It's not necessarily played, you know?
Yeah.
And where it's just like, okay, that's the four right there, but it's, no one's playing it. You're just like,
kinda, it's just implied.
It's just implied, you know? And so, you know, and they're like, Zydeco has this deal like where you hang on the one for like 12 minutes. And you can see it in the crowd, like when they're dancing that stuff, that the intensity, like the longer you hang there, it just goes up, you know. And
yeah.
It's like a suspense type deal.
Cajun
room. Oh, cool.
And very much so. It's very much that there's that one route that keeps going and going and going and keeps things moving the whole time.
Exactly. And that's kind of, you know, how we approached writing early on, and we got complicated, more complicated. And then with this record, it was back to that, like where there was like, if there were any changes, again, like it'd be maybe a four, you know. And there were parts, but not like
maybe a four,
you know, not like crazy, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, I myself
arranged type shit, you know.
I myself as a songwriter have dealt with the fact of writing bridges.
Oh yeah,
writing that turnaround.
Yeah, or
you know,
the
because,
sum up or whatever.
Because
you know?
Well, it gets to a point, you know, where you've written enough of verse chorus, and you do have to kind of have that change around.
Yeah,
you know, you need something where it's gonna change key for a minute. Things like that.
Perspective or something.
You know, when in your career did you get to a point where you realized that you needed that you needed something that changed it up for the audience a little?
Well, I mean, you know, with these songs, like when we're primarily, a lot of them were hanging on a one,
right?
You know, and a lot of that was just the recording process. Like we went out there, like it was like we'd show each other the song and then we'd play it and then we'd record it, you know.
Yeah.
It was like,
well,
play it once and then start recording, you know.
Nice.
And that concept is very much, I mean, especially with my orientation as an audio engineer, it's very much in the jam band realm, which I find very interesting with your music that you do, you know, much like Fish or Grateful Dead, like you hang on the one. You hang on that one chord for so long. And
I like
and
a lot of the, like the... Like
and
the,
it's interesting that you incorporate that in this style of music.
Well, Tame Impala is kind of a jam band, too.
I like the roots of jam. Like, I don't, you know... I like to think that like these bands would jive with jam bands, but I won't ever call us that, you know.
No, y'all are not a jam band.
Yeah,
no,
not because I mean the thing is like with a lot
y'all,
of different
y'all are entirely
genres,
too structured to be a jam.
Yeah, right. And it's, you know, it's like that's a it started off as a concept, you know. It's like, okay, this is a band that extends things, but then it becomes this vernacular, you know, where the jam bands kind of like they start having this certain like vocabulary of their styles and their grooves, and you know, it becomes incestuous. The roots start ripping down the treetop kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I'm not really into that shit, you know. But but I mean the roots, man. Like when before it had a name, you know, like Allman Brothers, early Fleetwood Mac, love the early like Peter Green era, you know, and the Dead. You know, I dig some of the Dead. Like, you know, I do have some metalhead friends that I'm friends with that were like, yeah, bro, we both fucking dig the Dead.
Yeah.
It's a weird anomaly out there, you know. But
it's a dirty secret, most definitely, with a lot of people. Yeah. And with a lot of musicians.
I also have, like, a very, you know, at this, I can't, you know, the bootleg thing, like, I did that in college and stuff. But now I got, like, a very specific, you know, couple of years that I dig it, you know, because I like the tones. And once the guitar tone is, like, I'm like not there with it. I'm like,
Have you ever opened up or played with like or know like Shooter Jennings and shit like that?
I met Shooter once, you know, and I mean it was just like he's playing downtown, and
it seems like y'all would go good together.
You know, there's so many people out there that I feel like we could jive well with. Chili Cold Blood opened for Tony Joe White once, which is
nice.
Tony Joe is one of my, you know.
Yeah.
He's definitely up there for me, you know. And I hung out with his family like the whole time, and they were like, I was like, man, I'm a real big fan, you know. And how are y'all related? And they're like, so, you know, basically they were like, well, how big of a fan are you? You know, they questioned me a little bit, and I was like, well, you know,
exactly.
We talked a little bit, and
let's talk.
Became friends, and that was cool. Like, and checking out his like what kind of wah wah pedal he was using, and stuff like that. Buddha.
I'm a huge geek like that. I love to see what people are using. What do you use in your rig?
I got
to
a
your tone.
Well, I got a Crybaby that I mean, it's kind of a piece of shit wah, but for some reason it fits for me. Like, it's got the 9-volt jack. Like, it's not some cool vintage piece.
Yeah,
but the sweep it and I, like, we get along well. Like, it's
nice.
If there's ever an extension, like, I can make that thing, like, sound like convulsions or,
yeah,
or like a long sweeping wah, you know. And I've had it since I was 15.
Wow.
You know, so.
Nice.
And then I got a Phase 90, which is kind of essential for any Wayland kind of stuff, you know.
Absolutely.
Nice.
Yeah, I got the Depths, which is a Univibe by Earth Devices.
Yeah.
And a...
yeah, that's a Earthquaker.
Yeah, right.
Earthquaker.
Yeah, TS-808. Not a throwback. I got TS-808 throwback.
Oh, nice.
And the then, original. Yeah, not the original, but like,
oh, yeah.
You know. retro, like, looking back, you know. And then one of those little EP boosters.
Okay.
And I got other pedals I change out once in a while.
Yeah.
You know, I need to get a good fuzz.
Okay.
And a better
octave. We can talk about that.
Yeah, we could. We could. I mean, not, you know.
But, I mean, it's interesting to hear what people are influenced by, what people are trying to emulate. And with your sound, like I said, it's so varied to actually understand what's happening with it, to understand what you're trying to do is kind of essential. And, well, you know, it's odd to bring a lot of that up with musicians.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, man, I don't care. I don't know. I mean, I go through, like, quick phases, like, in long phases, you know. I mean, I definitely have bands and artists I've listened to for years, and that I continue to, and then I'll go through, like, these periods where, like, okay, man, I want to really dig on this guitar player, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And,
what about, like, Hank the Third? What do you think about him?
Honestly, man, you know, I think he, truth be told, I think he sounds more like Wayne Hancock than his granddad, you know? But, I mean, you know, that's kind of a joke, but, He's got this cool, like, you know, a dual thing, and he's doing his own thing. Like, he's not staying in the shadow and, like, and trying to live off his identity.
Yeah, right.
You know, well, legacy.
True. It's hard to do to actually distinguish yourself amongst that.
Hank Sr. Yeah, oh, yeah. And you know, Hank Jr. went through that. Like, he had some records were, like, he was just kind of like, you know, and he wrote about staying in the shadows of, of his dad. And,
absolutely.
So, man, it's like, and you talk about Shooter, like,
yeah,
I get, like, the pressures. It's like they get, like, a foot in the door.
Yeah.
But it comes with a lot of pressure, man.
Yeah. Same with Roseanne Cash, people like that. You know,
absolutely, man.
They really have a different realm of proving themselves.
Yeah.
You know, also, I feel like reading interviews and seeing interviews on these type of people that I've... The same ones we're talking about now, Roseanne and Shooter and... Maybe even the Third, Hank the Third, but you know, they want to keep playing a certain style of music, and the industry itself keeps them, like, from being, you know, on the spotlight, kind of.
Right.
Like, and they're like, no, we're going to keep doing this. We're going to keep doing this.
It's, you know.
Well, and you do have to
guerrilla rock and roll, man.
You do have to stay true to yourself. You do have to stay true to your image and your vision.
Yeah, I think Hank 3 doing, I mean, you know, I'm not the guy to ask about him, to be honest.
He definitely is much more in the rockabilly vein,
right.
You know, things like that. So,
But, I mean, that I like that he's, you know, like Chili Cold Blood and Moonhangers, we've always kind of, we don't consider alter ego bands because it's not like that. But I get where he's coming from, where he's got, you know, he needs two outlets.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of that, we have one more track by you.
Oh, yeah.
That you've provided tonight, Good Girl.
Oh, yeah.
Give us a little bit about the creation of Good Girl before we go into it, what it's about.
Good Girl is that's an Ethan Shaw composition from the Chili Cold Blood record, and you know, it's a romping little number, and you know, I don't know exactly what process Ethan went through writing this. You know, it's a death ballad.
I'll tell you that. Nice.
Yeah,
I like it already.
Well, let's check it out and see what Good Girl is all about.
Yeah. We'll be right back.
trying to make a living, doing the best that she can. She was a good girl, loved a bad man. They told her what she had to do. They told her what she had to do. Now she's trying to make a living, doing the best that she can. Killed a bad man, put him 6 feet in the ground. Put him 6 feet in the ground. She just tried to keep on living, doing the best that she can.
And that is Good Girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, man. So for years, I just started playing slide with the Good Names. And okay. So this is the first Chile record where we did like dueling, you know, steel versus slide.
As really?
Traditional.
Dude,
game.
I love the way that sounded.
Because it's fun, man. I'm just like ripping off Ethan's licks.
Well, it's pretty nasty sounding, having the dueling sound going on, having both of them battling each other for space.
Both open tunings.
And, yeah,
you know, like I'm capoed way up on the, I guess, the 10th fret. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, the slide in and of itself is a totally different animal. Not many people really appreciate true. Is he a pedal steel player? Or?
Yeah, I mean, he plays straight steel with the.
Okay.
But he used to play pedal with the with Chile.
Even with a straight steel, it's still a phenomenal skill.
Yeah, yeah.
Steel, it's utterly wrong. Man,
steel in general, but especially like pedal steel. All of it is like you gotta be like kind of a laboratory minded musician that just shuts yourself in and obsesses on something, which is totally the way Shaw is.
I mean, in a good way, you know. It took me years to understand what a pedal steel player was doing, the pedals that he has at his feet, as well as the ones that he has at his knees, and everything else to bend and warp the strings and make things happen in certain octaves and stuff like that.
It's like you're talking earlier. I mean, that's something where you need to learn the instrument, like the assembly, and then figuring out maintenance and all that stuff. You gotta do your own.
You got to know everything. You got to know everything about that instrument,
indeed.
And you got to know everything about the pedals and how to set it up, how to maintain it, and it's a little bit more difficult than your average guitar rig.
Oh, definitely.
What's your main guitar, Doug?
It's a Les Paul.
Oh, nice.
It's called a faded Les Paul. Yeah, and it's
okay.
It's cool. I mean,
I probably saw it in some of the White Horse footage I saw.
Yeah,
probably.
It's got like a like no lacquer on it, you know.
Ah, so okay.
Real natural.
Yeah.
Barely a finish on it, and I love that gig.
Did you ever get that V you wanted?
Oh, I got the V.
I did. Hey, I just had to ask.
Yeah.
Well, as we do wrap up this episode, you know, tell everybody where they can go to find the music. Tell everybody where they can go to see you next. Yeah. You know, give us the full plug on all kinds of stuff, Doug.
Yeah, yeah, you got it. The Chili Cold Blood, the Chili, it's just Chili Cold Blood. We're going to be playing this Saturday. We're doing a record release at the White Horse that night.
Woo!
And nice. Things kick off at 10 o'clock with the Drakes opening, and then we'll take it and do the full record and other tunes, you know. And then earlier that day, we're going to be playing, since the beer, especially plug it, since we're talking beer here, you know.
I
got some real ales in front of me.
That's right.
we're playing the real ale anniversary.
Okay, great.
Blanco. And this will be our fourth year playing. Yeah, we're buds with everybody out there, you know. And
fantastic.
So it's a really cool thing. We play it every year.
That's a great location.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, absolutely. And where can they go to download the music? Where can they go to buy the music?
Chili Cold Blood's record is going to be on CD Baby. Memphis Strange is on Bandcamp at the moment. And Strayhand the Good Neighbors is all up on Bandcamp. And then I know this is a lot of plug, but
All right.
Yeah,
you do it.
Yeah, my website is DougStrahanMusic.com. They can find hats and records.
All the good Strahan swag, things like that.
Nice thongs for you to buy.
Now, when can they look for the latest albums to drop?
The Strange record is out.
It's coming out.
Yeah, and then Chili's is going to be up. And,
on the 22nd, right?
22nd, yeah.
Okay.
And the Good Neighbors are going in May to record, so we're going to probably have something ready by the fall.
Nice.
All right. Yeah. Fantastic. And we greatly look forward to having you in whenever that comes around.
Yeah, man. This is fun.
Have you back this on really, like, have the guys in and talk like that. And, you know, because, this just
we still have a lot of ground to cover here, man.
Oh absolutely.
So keep the tape rolling.
Well, as we do close out this episode, what is it for you that has kept you making music so long? Like you said, you started about 17 years ago whenever you moved to Austin, stuff like that. What is it that keeps you moving? What is it that keeps creating and writing new stuff and creating new genres of music
even? Oh, shoot. I don't know about that, but I'll take it. No, I'm kidding. I started, writing immediately when my dad first got me playing, as a kid.
Yeah.
And as far as keeping going with it,
I got a question for you. When your dad got you going, were you reluctant at all?
No.
Did you were like totally cool with it?
I was all in, man. Yeah.
You weren't like, oh, this is stupid. Or
no, I mean, the Mel Bay book was boring as shit, you know. But, you know, it led to, he would put a carrot out in front of me. He's like, well, if you spend time in Mel Bay, you can learn some Guns N' Roses, you know. And
yeah, yeah.
Like, okay.
You gotta learn the chords first.
Yeah.
You definitely gotta have the basis and things like that.
Props to
I think pops. It's, as far as keeping going, I mean, it's definitely, you're not in it for the money. I mean, it's a labor of love thing.
It's gotta be love first, for sure.
And that's just it. Especially with the Talking Sound podcast over the last couple of years, I've really come to define things, especially as an engineer, as far as artist and musician.
Yeah.
And artists to me are people who create, and they create constantly. They create whether or not they're selling music. Doesn't matter. They're always making stuff. They're always creating new stuff.
Right.
Musicians are the people that are out on the daily. They're plying their trade. They're playing jazz one night, blues another. And to me, you're definitely defined as artist. You definitely make what you make. You make what you make on your terms, and you make the music that you create. And the music that you create is absolutely phenomenal.
Oh, thank you.
It goes beyond the realm of musician, because you are doing so many different things and you are out there actively making your way as an artist and trying to create new and different things within genres.
Thanks, man. I mean, and I think it's just like sowing the oats, man,
Yeah, I like it.
No, that's a great way to put
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
It's a great way to put it.
Yeah. And as far as writing goes, like, you know, it's something that it's one thing. Like your voice is going to change over the years. Your writing perspective is going to change over the years. And you know, as you get older, like every record, I look back and was like, oh yeah, I was going through this and that time. And
it reflects that time frame, you know.
So I mean, I hopefully live to you know, be a ripe old age, and I'm writing about the perspective of an 80-year-old man, you know. I hope so. That'd be fun as shit,
you know? That'd be dope as shit. Now, well, have an 80-year-old man playing some dope ass shit.
It's gonna be a different kind of elderly man in the future, you know.
What would I'm sorry, go ahead,
sorry,
Julie.
I was just linking all of the places where people can purchase or download your music, and I remembered Bandcamp and DougStrahanMusic.com. What was the third one?
CD Baby for the Chili Cold Blood.
Yeah,
thank you.
And the rest, like all the other good names and Chili records, are all up on iTunes and Amazon, all that good stuff.
Absolutely. And I know the album that I've been listening to over the last week was Cold Black Dreams, Late Night Schemes.
Yeah.
That's definitely available on iTunes. It's also available on Amazon. As we part, what would be your one piece of one guiding light piece of advice for an up-and-coming musician? Someone who's just like a year and a half into this, has maybe been in a band or two, and looking to really make a go of things. What would be your one piece of 17-year wisdom that you would give to somebody, Doug Strahan?
Well, I would say, you know, don't skip the 101s, you know? Like, I mean, you got to be able to play a set before you can, you know, book the tour, you know, kind of thing. Like, you know,
sure,
get your gigs at Beerland on a Tuesday and make $5 total.
Yeah.
You know, and really
get it down.
Yeah. Get it down. And then, like, you know, I mean,
kind of like Granddad would say, like, dig your dick in the dirt first, you know. Sorry.
Yeah. Well,
it is a 21 and up.
You know, but I mean, and then there's a lot to be said about reading your crowd. And, like, that's not to say that you need to completely, you know, hand yourself over to them and play, you know, fucking Sweet Home Alabama when they ask for it, you know. But you should, like, you know, figure out, like, that space between you where you know, yourself can find enjoyment in the grooves that also, you know, catch their attention. Because, you know, it's there. It exists, you know.
No, it's synergy.
There's a crowd out there for you, you know.
Yeah, and, yeah, most definitely.
When it comes to, like, touring, I'd say the number one is, you know, getting there safely, which means, you know, have someone, like, when you're first starting off, you're not going to have a driver, you know. It's going to be amongst one of you guys, and someone's got to get that van safely there and sober. And
that's right.
There are so many, you know, you got some crazy drunks waltzing across all four lanes out there that you got to watch out for and be diligent and get there safe.
Yeah. Yeah, that would probably be my biggest piece of advice for people hitting the road. Is make sure you got somebody that has your back, has your six, and you know, is looking out for gear at the end of the night.
You gotta be careful out there. Oh yeah.
And making sure that you know, everything that came in is going out.
Yeah, yeah.
All that kind of stuff.
You gotta do double checks. Like, and everybody's gotta do their own
idiot check. Idiot check.
Now, Chris. I'm just saying, but, you know, a little wild card, but I did see Doug walk in with the guitar.
Oh.
I did as well.
Yeah,
that is true.
That would be all up to Doug, but I did see him walk in with the guitar.
I like where you're going with this,
Steve. Yeah.
Oh. These strings are all dusty from New Mexico, but
that's all right.
Hey, dusty strings sound great.
In the studio.
Yeah. Before we go out, if we could get one live one from you, Doug, that'd be great.
No pressure, though.
Yeah.
This one is going to be on the next Good Neighbors record.
All right.
And a little background. I, being of our generation, you know, you hear a lot of stories about the glory days of music.
Yeah.
And how it's kind of passed, you know. And one, you know, as a band out there, like, you got to
believe in your...
Yeah,
glory days.
Well, you gotta have you gotta have faith in what you're doing out there. Because, I mean, it's if you don't have it, no one else is gonna have it for you.
That's it.
You
know?
Good advice.
This is kind of like about it's just sometimes it's crazy out there, you know.
Yeah,
called lamppost. Sometimes I feel like a train with no rails to ride. A boxcar caught in the weeds, a ghost out of time. A troubadour lost in the woods, cobbling mad rhymes. Singing from the treetops to the crowd in his mind. Sometimes I'm cloudy, sometimes I'm blue. Sometimes I'm stormy, and then the sun shines through. Some days the sky's falling, easy as the dew. Sometimes I meet you halfway, and it breaks you in two. I'm just pissing on a lamppost, paper and pen. I'm dancing down an empty street with a bottle of gin. Joining and it could be as sweet as it was back then. As it was back then. As it was back then. Day that I was born. He looks back with gold in his eyes on the days of lore. He said, oh man, you just missed the big parade. Hotels and a whiskey, a sexy promenade. I'm just pissing on a lamppost, paper and pen. I'm running down a Holy Ghost, the one that I believe in. I'm dancing down an empty street with a bottle of gin. Join in and it could be as sweet as it was back then. As it was back then.
Fantastic.
Oh my.
Doug Strahan, everybody. God. Doug Strahan. One more time, the name
of
that song.
Are you fucking serious?
And the album that it's coming off of.
Lamp Post, and I'm not sure of the title yet, but okay. It's going to be Strahan.
Damn, if I wasn't a groupie, I'm
fantastic.
I am now.
That's it. That's it.
Thank you, man. And, thank you, Steve.
And, you know, one last time before we close out, where can people check you out? Where can people see the next Doug Strahan show?
Strahan and the Good Neighbors will be at the Black Art, actually, this the 21st.
Oh, nice. I played there a while back. Well, yeah, it's been a long while back, but yeah.
Good spot. And then touring info, you know, we got a Facebook page and then DougStrahanMusic.com.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, much.
Yeah, thank you, Chris.
For coming in this evening. Thank you so much for coming in to be a part of it.
Yeah, it's awesome.
We'd love to have you on again, as I said, whenever the album launches, stuff like that.
Like any goddamn time you
want. To have you guys on Talking Sound, all that kind of stuff. Come in, talk about the creation of the album, the recording, the studio process.
That sounds like fun.
Everything else. And on that note, everybody, as you're on the internet checking out the music of Doug Strahan, please make sure to go on by dudesandbeer.com. Make sure to head on by the apps store on iTunes, on the Google Play Store, to check out our app. Until next time, everybody, thank you so much. Until next time, if you can't be good, be good.
Thanks
at
for
it.
Listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our audio streams and chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for both Android and iDevices, available on the Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the Revolution Digital Group family of podcasts. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.